Hi, I'm Nina, and this is Color Wheel, a podcast about modern and contemporary paintings by women artists. Hi, this is Nina. This is part two of an investigation of the 1925 painting, Portrait of My Mother by Florine Stettheimer, on view at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. Stettheimer's deliberately modernist approach makes the painting fun to look at and analyze, but does not hinder our ability to understand the elements of the painting or the story they tell. We are looking at Stettheimer's 84-year-old mother, Rosetta, and the places, people, and objects that were meaningful to her. In part one, I talked about how this painting makes Rosetta look like a beetle in its lair, about to be trapped in a ruffled white web woven by a chic black lace spider hovering in a corner. In part two, I will talk about the way Stettheimer explores space, the senses, and memory. Stettheimer is a master of combining naturalistic with decorative elements, and the decorative extravagance in this painting invites a multi-sensory experience. The textures of a feathery, fan-like plant, a puffy green curtain, the delicate wing-like lace on Rosetta's shawl, and the heavy embroidery on white curtains cascading over a wall invoke the sense of touch. There is also a heavy chair covered in dense black velvet that begs to be petted like a cat, and an extremely squeezable ovoid red pillow draped over its side. The pillow is so large it looks like a person. Our sense of smell is triggered by flowers at the front and the back of the scene. There are carnations in the room where Rosetta stands, and a riot of red and pink roses and cherry blossoms in the garden at the back of the painting. There's something special about Stettheimer's inclusion of items that carry a specific scent, like spring flowers in her work. Those images might trigger our own memories of catching the fragrance of plants and flowers in the air when we were young. A crisp black and white piano on the right and a very small tambourine at the back of the painting bring music to mind. Stettheimer often used musical instruments like pianos, drums, and horns, along with images of people dancing, to suggest lively sounds in her paintings. Guided by their mother, the Stettheimer children were steeped in the musical culture of Germany in the late 19th century. Florine grew up listening to Strauss at the theater and brass bands in the streets of Stuttgart. As an adult, she wrote a poem about hating Beethoven, too serious. Later, she fell in love with Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, which is playing in the background of this podcast. And Stettheimer was mad for jazz in the 1920s. There is also a sense of rhythm in the painting, meaning a repetition of shapes and colors. For example, the rounded green drapes, the umbrella-like canopy, and the curves of the white lace curtains all echo each other. A slim bulbous white vase at the front of the room and a shapely opalescent urn at the back of the room share a sinuous look, bringing to mind Brancusi's marble Bird in Space sculpture from 1923. The black velvet of the chair, the black of Rosetta's outer dress, and the ebony piano speak to each other, as do the undulating curves on the side of the chair, the corner of a slim card table, and the side of the piano. Similarly, the deep red of the puffy cushion resting on the back of the black chair engages in a call and response with a low bookshelf in the bottom right corner of the scene, also painted in a saturated red. The rhythms produced by these repeated elements are not so much meant to be heard but felt, like a rumble or reverberation. Stettheimer also calls out the sense of sight via the tiny spectacles in Rosetta's hand at the very center of the canvas and the crystal clear glass doors at the back of the room. They are outlined in red, but not cluttered with handles or doorknobs. peeking out through all of these dramatic, sensuous objects are reminders of things Rosetta loved. The heavy black chair, strewn with fringed cushions covered in gold cloth, may have been her favorite spot to recline. A black card table appears on the left side of the painting. It is topped with an ace of hearts and a tiny purple velvet box. Maybe she liked to gamble. The low red bookshelf on the right is full of novels. What was Rosetta reading? Tom Jones, Pamela, and the Decameron. Stettheimer's biographer, Barbara Blomink, labels these books classic erotic literature. Or we could think of them as we think about this painting, items that invoke the senses. There is another idea to consider that may seem at odds with the description of objects in this painting as fluffy or squeezable, and that is to think of this composition, in addition to its role as a personal remembrance or an homage to Rosetta, as an experiment in non-illusionistic painting. In part one, I suggested that Florine, like Matisse, experimented with unrealistic color, especially in her portraits. I think she also follows Matisse's example in playing with the representation of painted space. She makes us ask the question, are we looking at a three-dimensional space or at paint on a canvas? This was an idea that lots of turn-of-the-century artists were playing with, including cubists like Picasso and Braque, colorists like Matisse, abstract artists like Kandinsky, and German expressionists like Klimt and Kirchner. Let us consider the room where Rosetta appears. As viewers, we expect to see at least a floor and walls in this room. We seem to have a floor and a back wall, which meet where the carpet ends and the back doors begin. Stettheimer even gives us a small straight line where the top of the carpet meets the garden path. But that demarcation line, which should run the length of the room, is obfuscated by other objects to the right and left of the door. We assume or imagine that there is a dividing line between the floor and the back wall, but that line does not actually appear in the painting. We also have no lines to show the corners of the room where the back and side walls meet, or where those walls meet the floor. Although, to be fair, we are looking at a narrow slice of a possibly large space. If we look at the black chair, the piano, and the low bookshelf, their placement makes little sense for an actual room, especially one that is supposed to be large. They are all crammed together at odd angles in the narrow space that Stettheimer has laid out. A few other elements hint at flatness. There are no shadows in this space. Rosetta's face and arms are outlined and only faintly modeled. There is an emphasis on her shape, but not on the contours of her face and limbs. The same goes for the black chair on the left. We see its strong outline and assume it is a chair with a cushion to sit on and a back to lean against. However, there is only a faint illusion of depth here, and that is provided by the outline of the table in front of it, which neatly defines the dimensions of the seat cushion. The real indication that this painting is all about the surface of the canvas is its abundant patterning. The flowers on the rug, for example, are evenly spaced and represented as red dots surrounded by white dabs of paint. The size and shape of the flowers remain consistent no matter where they appear on the pink and gray carpet, even though logically they should become smaller as they recede into the distance. The white curtains above Rosetta offer a profusion of pattern. The embroidered shapes on the curtain are so large in comparison to the space they occupy that they seem to be signaling their role as decoration. They play an almost funny role as both a transparent curtain, which has little depth, and a pattern of paint on a canvas, which has none. Thank you. The elephant in this room, is it a room? Painted directly above Rosetta's vaguely smiling head, is a scene from the past taking place in the garden outside. The green taupe and white curtains inside the room, and even the green feathery plant on the right, work together in service of bookending a tiny performance that comes to life just above Rosetta's head. In fact, the tilt of the open glass doors and a wide white gravel path that cuts through a pale green lawn lead our eye directly to this event, which is set so far back in the painting, we have to strain to see what is happening. Stettheimer uses visual tricks to keep our eyes trained on this area. On the left side of the garden, there is a collection of red and pink roses in full bloom, but it is not clear if they are growing from a bush in the background or from the top of a potted tree near the glass doors. We may also scratch our heads over an element on the right. Is that a tree with a narrow trunk growing from a flower pot? Or is it not a tree trunk at all, but a line of flowers in the grass near the gravel path? What is going on at the very back of the garden? A peach-colored picket fence indicates the physical limit of the outdoor space. It seems to prevent the characters from falling off the edge of the earth, because there is absolutely nothing behind the fence but blue sky. Here's the scene that emerges. Two children dance on a white stage that bizarrely seems to rest on two wooden barrels. That seems unsafe. Surrounding the stage and appearing delighted with the performance are two other children and a woman holding a baby. These figures represent Florine, her siblings, and their nurse, Maggie. Curiously, there is a gauzy white haze hovering over the children on stage. It is not clouds or rain. This transparent white shroud may hint of the fact that this part of the scene is a reminiscence, because these are Rosetta's children as they looked many years ago. They all look so joyous and carefree in their summer clothes and small movements. They seem to dance and bow and gesture to each other. One girl plays a tambourine. Maybe this is how Rosetta fondly remembers her children, or how Florine remembers herself and her siblings, playing in the garden, unaware of the pressures of the adult world. I really do not know what Florine Stettheimer was thinking or feeling when she made this portrait. Barbara Blomink argues that the painting highlights Rosetta's fertility because it includes images of her children and references sensuality via the novels on the low bookshelf. I think Stettheimer is obscuring as much as she is showing. After all, she liberally employs curtains, and curtains can show, but they can also hide. Florine obscures her mother's shape in the dark cloak, mixes up and adds imagined elements to the room, and paints a haze over the scene in the background. It's almost as if Stettheimer is painting the past while thinking about the future, which is unclear. This is a point of view I understand. People, jobs, and success come in and out of our lives, and we don't necessarily know what comes next. We can plan for the future, and we can imagine what will happen, but we cannot control the future. I guess our choice is to live with the anxiety of impermanence and a lack of control, or to decide to focus on and stay curious about what is happening here in front of us. Florine Stettheimer's work is helping me to do that now, and that is one tiny part of her immense success as an artist of the 20th century.